This is Solly and Steve on Sports, the show dedicated to us ranting about sports.
Doing this is indeed Solly and Steve on Sports, the show dedicated to us ranting about sports, brought to you by the I-95 Sports and Entertainment Network and Mile High Radio in Denver. Solly and Jeff coming to you once again from the FedEx Studios. The other two cohorts on this show, Steve and Third Mike Dan, are not here. They once again have prior commitments. Will they actually do a show with us again? Who knows? Why? Because this is the final episode for us for 2017. Jeff will be leaving for, Tokyo next week?
Yep.
So he will be gone the day after Christmas. He will be back early January. After that, do we know what we're doing yet?
About what?
This show.
We're still going to have episodes. It's just that we're going to be recording when I get back. That's all.
All right, so we're going to be taking at least a 2-week, maybe 3-week hiatus.
Yes.
We will be back by the time the playoffs are well underway in the NFL. We will try to keep
I'm sure that gives you time to talk about things in between, like mini rants, or if you want to just post certain things about the show.
I keep doing stuff all the time with social media, facebook.com/SollySteve1Sports.
Yes.
Twitter at @S_S_Sports.
Yep.
The blog, ss_sports.blogspot.com.
Yep.
And occasionally we do have mini rants, although...
Nope.
we haven't done one in months.
I wish we can bring that back.
I know. Well, hey, I'm looking at my two cohorts to try to do more on the show, but... We get that to them once we can. We will have their pigskin picks, we hope, by later on in the show. We have Danny's opinion on one thing, and it's the NFL. It's the no-catch rule.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's one thing that's the only thing Danny made a comment on, and the only comment Steve has given me tonight is on the New York Mets.
Yeah, a lot has happened with the Mets.
You want to start with that, or do you want to go into the NFL? It's up to you.
Let's go into the NFL, break it up with MLB stuff.
And then we'll do Pigskin Pick'em to close it out.
Yeah, maybe throw in some good Long Island
Islanders talk.
Yeah,
we kind of have to with that. But as far as the NFL is concerned, both New York teams completely, totally, and utterly crapped the bed this week. The Eagles, I'm surprised that the Giants actually put up a fight against Philly. They ended up going...
You would think that the whole caution would be on the offense of the Eagles because of Carson Wentz's injury for the rest of the season.
Very true, but
it seems like Nick Foles has done a great job, with his first game in relief.
It was a 34-29 win by the Eagles.
So the offense is clicking.
Yeah, Foles went 24 of 38, 237 yards, 4 touchdowns.
Very good.
Aguilar had 7 catches for 59. Ertz had 6 for 56 and 1 touchdown. Alshon Jeffrey had a touchdown. Tony Burton had the other touchdown. It was actually more so special teams by the Eagles, or their special teams defense, than it was anything that the offense did. Because the offense, and I agree, the biggest thing that I had, or the biggest fear I had from an Eagles perspective going into this game was, can Philly's offense replicate some of their earlier season magic without their best player there? The answer was a resounding yes.
For this one test, yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Even though it was against the Giants where everything has gone wrong for them.
Yeah, I mean, come on. It's whatever can go wrong usually does go wrong for the Giants, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, the Eagles still have a test the final two games of the season. They got Oakland on Christmas Day. It's the Monday night game. And they closed the season New Year's against Dallas. So they have to deal with that for Philly. And
they did... The things that they already have claimed...
they've won the division,
yes.
And they've got a first-round bye now because of the win over the Giants.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Do they really want to do anything? Because unless they really want to go for home field advantage.
I think they would. But, I mean, if you're the Eagles, you've already got a lot of momentum on your side, and you want to keep that rolling right through the playoffs.
Yes, I do know that. But is it really worth them to go for that first-round the home field advantage, I should say?
Well, you'd have to. I mean, you're still fighting it out with the only team that's close to you, the Eagles are 12-2. The only team that's close to you as far as home field advantage would be the 11-3 NFC North Division champions, the Minnesota Vikings. Then you've got 10-4 New Orleans, 10-4 Carolina, and 10-4 Los Angeles. We'll get to them a little later on too, but
so there's still something
worth fighting for.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like they have the whole advantage and they can just rest on this one game and stuff. And
you win next week, Monday night, you got it.
Exactly.
You got home field locked up throughout the NFC playoffs.
But it means so much more for Oakland, even though their season hopes are in dire straits.
What does Oakland have to do with this?
Because they would have to play for something. Like,
yeah.
So if Oakland wins, because they would, keep their playoff hopes alive.
They're 6-8. They're barely hanging in there behind the 7-7 Chargers and the 8-6
Although
Chiefs.
Although that could be determined based on what happens with the rest of the league, since they are the last game to be played.
Yes, they are. So it could be all for nothing by the time the Monday night game will turn on Christmas. But as far as the Giants are concerned, looking at it, Eli was fantastic on Sunday. He actually played his heart out, which was amazing if you look at the numbers that Eli put up. Eli finished today going 37 of 57, 434 yards, 3 touchdowns and a pick, and he was sacked once. I mean, understand that. 57 passes and 434 yards for Eli Manning, who's 36 years old.
I don't know what went wrong with the Philadelphia defense.
Well, they went AWOL if they allowed Eli Manning to get 434 yards against them. It was a close football game at halftime. It was 21-14.
The Giants also got 3 touchdowns in the first 3 drives.
Yeah. They were up 13-7 at the end of the first quarter. They were down 21-13 going into halftime. Couldn't really come back close after that, but you got to get the special teams.
Wait, it was points in the... Yeah, that's right. Points in the first 3 drives, not 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Philly at least...
My mistake.
Philly's secondary, at least, and their special teams defense, I should say, played a huge role in this game because they blocked the punt, they blocked the field goal, and they blocked an extra point, which could have all possibly culminated in 11 points for the Giants, which could have been a huge momentum swing. So, the special teams defense for the Eagles has to be given a lot of credit for blocking 3 kicks in one game.
Yeah,
punt, field goal, and the extra point.
Exactly. So that's a good teams find ways to win type
of
scenario.
Yes, they do. You can make that argument too with the Rams. Look what Los Angeles did on Sunday. Going into Seattle.
Oh, God, just massacred them.
Oh, that wasn't even a close game.
No, not. It's like the first half or first quarter. That was just all. I keep on saying St. Louis. I want to say St. Louis.
I know. But Los Angeles. Most of the year to it, too.
Yeah, but God, the Rams just devoured.
It was embarrassing at one point. I mean, there was a couple of lopsided games this week. I mean, think about it. You had the Seattle game, which Todd Gurley went off, and unfortunately, that kind of killed my chances in the playoffs.
You shouldn't focus on fantasy football anymore.
42-7 Seattle, 42-7 Los Angeles over Seattle.
Fantasy football makes you miserable.
Not really. I'm playing in the third place game, at least.
It makes you miserable.
No, it doesn't. Unlike you, I actually enjoy playing fantasy football.
I'd rather watch the games for the teams and not for the player.
I do that, too. I'm like, I set my lineup. I have no control over it. I just watch the Jets on Sunday. Or whenever the hell the Jets play. Or if the Jets aren't on because of the bye week, I find another good game to watch.
Yeah.
But
fantasy football just does a whole thing of you focus more on what the player's doing. And when they get those garbage points and it puts you ahead of the lead, you're like, yes, because they help my fantasy team and, they just don't really care about you, really. But it's
for the most part, I don't care. Honestly, I really don't care. I'm like, if I'd won the league, I would have won $70 this year. If I'd come in last place like Brendan did, I wouldn't have won anything. I would have been out. Who cares? It's like I set my roster, I make changes if I have to, and I just leave it alone, and whatever happens, happens. Todd Gurley finished with 21 carries, 152 yards, and 3 touchdowns on the ground. And then he had 3 catches, 28 yards, and another touchdown through the air. So he had 168 total yards and 4 scores. And people are trying to convince somebody like me that he shouldn't be in stronger consideration for the MVP. You're out of your damn mind. Look, Brady's having a good year. I'm not taking that away from him. There's been 3 names that I've heard thrown around most of the year for consideration for MVP. It's Tom Brady, which is, you kind of figured he's going to be in contention for MVP no matter what. Yeah, Todd Gurley, because of what he's done with the Rams, and he's a big reason why the Rams are 10-4. And then the guy who was responsible for getting the Eagles 11 of their first 12 wins, Carson Wentz. Now, of those 3, seriously, do you think statistics should play as large a role as they do in MVP numbers? In MVP voting? Or do you take into account the other intangibles as well?
Because I remember hearing about this Todd Gurley MVP race, and you know, you compare his stats to Drew Brees and Tom Brady.
Right.
And how they have the better stats overall in yardage and percentage and but touchdowns.
Again, it's also tough to be able to compare quarterbacks to running backs and receivers. It's kind of like mixing. I'm like, I know they all put this, they have the same general concept. They're all offensive players, obviously.
I mean, honestly, for someone who finally has proven himself as a number one quarterback.
This being who? Wentz or Brady? Who are you talking about?
I'm talking about Gurley.
Gurley's a running back.
Sorry. Yeah. Wow. My brain is totally off.
Are you okay tonight?
No, I'm not. I'm pretty tired.
All right. So don't worry. We apologize for
okay,
Jeff.
Okay. Yeah.
Gurley's a running back.
Yeah. So no, I was thinking about Case Keenum. That was the whole thing.
Wait a minute. Whoa. How do you go from Todd Gurley to Case Keenum? How does that happen?
My brain was on the mind of Keenum's quarterback play and MVP. I totally glossed over Keenum.
Okay.
This is why we're here, where we are always.
Yeah. This is to save Jeff from himself and anybody else on the roadways from going to the other studios.
No, I mean, also looking up the standings and trying to formulate other things, so it was like I was half listening to you. So.
No, I know.
Yeah.
The way I look at it, Brady's usually an MVP conversation.
I mean, that's the problem is that almost all the time the MVPs go to a quarterback
usually.
Unless you have a record-breaking year as a running back.
Yeah, I mean, it's either going to be Gurley or Wentz, if you ask me.
Is Gurley having an all-time season?
If you look at it,
because
total numbers for Todd Gurley this year, at least as far as running goes, 257 carries, 1,187 yards, and 13 touchdowns. As far as receiving goes, 54 catches, 630 yards, 4 scores. So yeah, he's had himself a pretty good year.
I mean, that's the problem with the whole MVP thing, because you know it's 9 out of 10 times going to go to a quarterback.
Yeah, unfortunately.
So why not have quarterback of the year then?
I think that's also kind of how they break it up. It's
yeah, seriously, just keep it at that. Don't do MVP because honestly, that's
no. Well, they break it down differently. It's MVP, offensive player of the year, defensive player of the year.
No, it shouldn't be just one from offense. It should be wide receiver.
MVP,
MVP, no MVP.
So it should be. Best receiver of the year, running back of the year, quarterback of the year, lineman of the year.
And a receiver, not wide receiver, just receiver, because that could be a tight end or anyone else.
I mean, Todd Gurley's had decent numbers catching passes out of the backfield, too.
Yeah. So I feel like you should have those three, the best receiver, best runner, running back.
Best quarterback.
And best quarterback. And for defense, probably, that has to be some defensive player.
There's defensive player and defensive rookie of the year.
Oh, yeah. Well, rookie of the year, that can go. Yeah, that rookie of the year should be all-encompassing.
Both offense and defense. All right.
No, offense. I'm saying, like.
So keep the rookie of the year
Because there's offensive rookie of the year and the defense.
Defensive rookie of the
year,
Yeah.
Keep that because, fine, whatever. I don't care about that. But I'm saying for defensive positions, I mean, you can't really say, like, best
safety, best cornerback, best linebacker.
Exactly. You can't do that.
No, so I mean,
it's sad that you can only break down the defensive into one of these 11 positions,
right?
And with the offensive side, you could do three positions.
I know. But getting back into it, before we keep going off on other tangents in the NFL,
sakes, a defensive player like has won how many MVPs? Probably
four. I think I know
that is so rarefied air.
I think the last defensive player to win it was LT.
Yeah, so
Lawrence Taylor in '86.
Yeah, because. Again, everyone thinks MVP is the quarterback, so it should be just the quarterback of the year award.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying, but I don't think the NFL is going to do that.
No, of course not. Why would they? They do everything backwards.
Of course they do. They just gave Roger Goodell a 5-year extension. We talked about that a couple weeks ago.
They do everything backwards.
Yep.
And they give, and we still have no idea what a catch is anymore.
Nah, all right. I was going to get into the Jets game, but we'll go into that.
Yeah.
There's actually a couple of boneheaded plays, one in the Steelers game and one in the Raider game.
But let's do the more memorable one.
Which is Jesse James, the Pittsburgh tight end, making a catch at the 3-yard
line.
Jesse James, the tight end.
R-O-double-D.
Yep. I know exactly what you're doing with that.
You say it then.
Oh, you didn't know?
No, how's he go with the Jesse James?
It's, Come on, R-O-double-D-D-O-double-G.
And then he goes, no, because he says Jesse James and stuff.
Yes, sir. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, D-Generation X proudly brings to you its soon-to-be WWF Tag Team Champions of the World, the Road Dogg Jesse James, the Badass Billy Gunn.
Thank you.
The New Age Outlaws.
Thank you.
I don't know why you had trouble remembering that, or did you just want to hear me do it?
I just want to hear you do it, but you really didn't sound enthusiastic.
I've done that so many times over the years.
Yeah, you got bored. Yeah, okay. Road Dogg, Jesse James, the Badass Billy Gunn. All right, move on. Yeah, okay.
So, the Steelers tight end, Jesse James, made a catch at the 4-yard line.
You show more enthusiasm. Go ahead. Do that on your other shows. All okay, right. But not here. Okay. Passive-aggressive Jeff says that, so you're on your own. Like,
fine.
I really care. Okay.
Fine. Well, he's off doing his own thing in Space Mountain. Yeah, no, go back to Tommy's Planet and go do your own thing, please.
I'm fed up with this world.
You gotta love throwing room references into this show. It's great, ain't it?
I did not.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, hi, Matt.
Anyway, so yeah, back to what we originally started to talk about before we just randomly started pontificating other stuff.
Tangents are the meaning of life.
Yes, they are.
Meaning of life are tangents.
Especially room ones. Anyway. So Jesse James made a catch at about the 3-yard line. Nobody touched him. He's going to the ground.
Yeah, that's when they were first looking on it. When I saw that knee go down, I thought that was it. But then no one touched him. So then it's like he's going forward, and then they somehow he crossed the plane, and everyone when they see it think, oh, that's a touchdown because
he crossed the plane of the goal line, right? Which is the same argument I made.
Yeah, but the thing is that somehow, when the ball hits the ground, because, you know, football isn't a nice sphere to really hold the ball nicely in your hand.
No.
It sticks out and it hits the ground and it's moving around, you know. Even though you're still holding the tiny to yourself, you're still, like, bouncing around with that football in your chest and in your head.
It's an incomplete pass. Steelers don't score. Patriots win the game.
Stupid.
Well, no, the officials made the rule correctly. It's he never had complete control of the ball all the way
through
the football.
He did have complete control of the ball, because if you didn't, then why would you lunge for the end zone?
Yeah, it's the entirety of the play. It's not as soon as he
caught
the ball.
That's the stupidest. It's still stupid.
The rule is he has to be able to maintain position the entire way through, and he never did because the ball came out when he hit the ground.
So they followed the rule with 10,000 amendments to it.
Yeah.
That are still unnecessary and too confusing.
Yeah,
but you look at it, it's like, yes, he caught it. He's going down. He crossed the plane. That's a touchdown.
It's shit. Oh, I would have applied the same rule to that I do for anybody going for a goal line dive or a quarterback sneak.
Exactly.
If you break the plane and the ball gets knocked out after you've broken the plane already, but you have possession as you break the plane, it should have been a touchdown.
Like the Megatron one in 2010.
Yep. That's the first thing he caught.
He was going down and he slams the ball down because he knew he got into the end zone. And then they're like, no, because you dropped it. It's like, screw you.
I know. But Danny did give his thoughts on what happened. As far as this is concerned, this is the only thing he said about the NFL or anything else in sports. There's only one thing I'm saying. It wasn't a catch, and the NFL are a bunch of morons. That's according to Danny. And you know what? He's right. The NFL
It wasn't a catch. I did not catch it. But I did catch it, and they said it was not. Oh, hi, Roger.
Roger Goodell. Oh, hi, Pittsburgh. How can we piss you off more this week? Oh, let's give the game to the Patriots because we want them in the Super Bowl every year.
We want them to be happy after the flake it.
Yeah, the hell with diversity in the NFL. The old wooden ship does not exist in this league.
Especially since I got $50 million and I don't even care anymore.
And I don't even care that the XFL might come back.
Oy.
I'll get to that later on in the show. But yeah, the NFL clearly...
Do we really need to talk about the XFL?
Well, Vince McMahon's going to attempt to bring it back.
I don't know how you would.
I don't either, but that's one rumor I'm reading is Vince wants to bring the XFL back.
Yeah, okay, with all these concussion lawsuits and injuries and stuff, you want to bring back the XFL, which was, like, completely more barbaric than the NFL?
Pretty much.
Do you remember seeing those ads about, what's the difference between the NFL and XFL? And there was, like, commercials of compare and contrast where the NFL was all hand like all goody-goody safety and stuff, and the XFL was it's all manly and fierce and tough
violent.
And violence. Yes!
Because Vince McMahon loves big sweaty men and he loves violence too.
Yes.
So yeah, you got that. XFL might not work, but apparently I think the XFL would do a better job of accurately defining the rules and giving a little leeway than the NFL does.
Yeah. You know how the XFL would do better if it ever came back?
How?
More simplified rules.
Yeah.
About a catch and everything else.
Yeah.
And just enforce that. There you go.
I mean, there's been a couple of times where we've talked about this, how the Jets have gotten screwed over on catch no catch rule a couple of times. But, I mean, let's see.
Honestly, why can't you just join hand in hand with the NFL and make XFL a developmental league?
Exactly. That would be. I've been petitioning. I mean, I've said it on the show a couple of times. And if you want to hear it, you can go check us out on SoundCloud. We've got all the old episodes there. If you want to go back and listen for yourself, just search Sully and Steve on Sports, hit download, and you can take us with you wherever you go. But I've been petitioning for this for a long time now, that the NFL, I think, needs a developmental league. So that way, quarterbacks, receivers, running backs, and everybody else who gets drafted into the NFL can be properly brought along at their own pace, so that way by the time they hit the NFL, they can be NFL ready. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo's proven that he's NFL ready. He's 5-0 in his first five starts, and he's won three straight games for the 49ers. Jimmy Garoppolo's proven he's NFL ready. Guys like Ryan Leaf and Jamarcus Russell clearly weren't NFL ready. Tim Tebow, clearly not NFL ready. Trent Richardson, the running back, clearly not NFL ready. That's why you need developmental leagues. Just saying.
Yeah, the whole NFL thing is, you know, you basically throw your baby bird off the ledge and see if it can fly.
Pretty
much. And that's really, you know, not healthy for the league, because you can't create stars that way, since a good portion of them just can't seem to fly.
I know. There's that, and there's also the...
And then you rush all of them, and you think, why can't we develop anyone? Because you're rushing them!
Exactly. There was that, and there was also the bad ending to the Dallas game, too. I don't know. Did you catch that at all?
No.
All right, so what happened was the Cowboys are playing the Raiders on Sunday, and Oakland's got a chance to come back in the game. They're down by like a score late. Dallas ended up winning the game 20-17. Oakland has a chance to take the lead by... They're going to go up 23-20 if Derek Carr were to score. There's a quarterback option. He's running down the sideline, and he's got a chance to make a dive for the pylon. Reaches out for the pylon. The ball gets knocked out of his hand before it crosses the plane and goes out of the end zone. It's a touchback, Dallas football.
I still hate that rule.
Because the touchback rule? Yes.
Yeah, because if it happens and it's get on the 1 yard line, then it's still going to be Oakland's ball.
Right.
But somehow, one extra yard into the end zone and it's Dallas's ball?
Because it went. I know,
but still.
Flew over the goal line, flew past the pylon,
you know,
and
what?
Out of the end zone.
If you want to be a touchback, then just bring it back to the 20 yard line or something.
And keep the ball with Oakland.
Yeah. You know, so if it's a fumble like that in the end zone and it's recovered by Oakland, then just give it like a 20-yard penalty from the end zone.
Oh, come on, Jeff. Jeff, come on. This is the NFL.
I know, right?
Jeff, the NFL is like the point system on whose line is it anyway.
It doesn't even matter.
Exactly. It's logic in the NFL is like the points in whose line. It does not matter. It's inconsequential to what is going on. But now, if Derek Carr had just run out of bounds at like the 1 yard line instead of making the plunge for the goal line, then it would have been Oakland ball, first and goal on the two, and Oakland surely would have punched it in to take the lead, but they didn't. They missed out on it. The Raiders now sit at 6-8 and are still on the outside of the playoffs.
Very much on the outside. This is basically, you know, whatever that dumb cliche is.
It's coming down to the wire the last 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
We've got two
weeks
left.
Yeah, it's a must-win game for them.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, we've already got a couple of playoff spots locked up. There's four divisions that have already been clinched. The Pats won the AFC East.
No surprise.
Steelers won the North.
No surprise.
Eagles won the NFC East. Vikings won the NFC North.
Well, I mean, Tom Brady being injured.
Tom Brady, don't you mean Aaron Rodgers? You okay?
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers is hurt.
Well, he's back on the IR now.
Yeah, he's done for the year.
Yeah,
but
since they're done for the season, good for them.
Well, it's the only reason they even activated him in the first place was because he wanted to come back and see if Green Bay could have a chance at it. But the Packers now sit at 7-7, and they would need a miracle to get 9-7 will not get you into the playoffs. 10 wins has to get you in.
The NFC, absolutely.
Yes. And there's still a couple of teams that have an outside shot at it. Seattle's 8-6, even though they just got steamrolled by the Rams on Sunday. Detroit's 8-6. They still have an outside shot at it. And I can't believe I'm going to say this. I don't know. What's more of a surprise? To you, the fact that the Packers missed the playoffs this year for the first time since 2008, or the fact that the Jacksonville Jaguars are in the playoffs for the first time in 10 years?
Jacksonville.
The Jaguars, they haven't won the division yet.
I would be more surprised if Green Bay did not make the playoffs with a healthy Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
That would be more surprising.
Yes. Now, Rodgers missing 2 months obviously hurt their chances.
Exactly.
In, you know, immeasurably. But the fact that Jacksonville hasn't won the division yet. All right?
It's a win and in situation for them.
No, they're already in. Houston.
For the division.
Yeah, they win this week to get the division.
That's what I mean. In for the division title.
Yeah, they win this week. Division title is theirs. It also kind of depends on what happens with Houston.
Houston's got the team that Jacksonville ransacked.
No, not Houston. What am I saying?
I don't know.
I'm getting my team fixed.
I was thinking about that game that Jacksonville destroyed them last
Tennessee.
Week.
So Tennessee's the only one that's behind them there. The Titans are 8-6. Tennessee's dealing with the Rams on Sunday. So Houston.
Rams have something to play for, so they're not giving up.
No, hell no, they're not. Jacksonville, they have the 49ers. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic right there. Doesn't matter what happens with Jacksonville and San Francisco. I know Jacksonville wants to do it their own way. They want to win. They want to beat the 49ers and wrap up the division.
I mean, it's also a good test for Garoppolo. So.
Yeah, he's won his first three starts as Niners quarterback. He might be the future quarterback for this football team.
Yeah.
But, you know, San Francisco's got something to play for. They want to, especially Jimmy Garoppolo, he wants to prove to New England. He's like, hey, you finally get rid of me? Screw you guys.
I don't want to say that for Jimmy Garoppolo because it's more like, screw you guys, you never gave me the opportunity to start.
Right. So they,
even though there's a good reason why.
Yeah, you got some
guy
named
Tom
Brady.
Have the opportunity during the Tom Brady suspension, but it's like he was ready to play.
And now he's getting a shot in San Francisco and he's thriving.
So I don't know if you want to say screw you Patriots or thank you Patriots for giving me the chance
to
start.
Well, here's the thing though. Jacksonville could have the division title wrapped up by the time that game kicks off. Because they're the 4-5 start. They're in San Francisco. Meanwhile, Tennessee is home to the Rams. So if the Rams beat the Titans, the time the 4 o'clock game starts for Jacksonville, they could already have a division title wrapped up.
Good point.
So that's also the beauty, I think, now of having the schedule changes like this, plus 2 Saturday games, which helps out. 2 Saturday games are Bills, Pats, and Saints-Falcons. That's going to be good. That should be a decent game. Saints-Falcons.
Are you sure that's a Saturday game?
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's Sunday game at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
There's a couple games.
Yeah, no, it's Green Bay and Minnesota.
Bay, Minnesota, and Dallas, Indy. I'd gotten a little far ahead on the schedule. Those are the Saturday games.
Overshot that, right?
Yep. I was looking too far up on the schedule, so.
No problem.
Baltimore and Indy is the early game. Green Bay, Minnesota is the nightcap. Everything else is Sunday except for Christmas Day, which is the Monday night game, and it's Oakland and Philly.
Oh, there's 2 games there.
Oh, yeah, there's a 4th and it starts pitching
Houston. Come on!
I know. So we're both slipping on this episode.
Yeah, I know.
Oy vey. And surprisingly, there's no Sunday night game, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a nice little break of things. I guess they want everyone to be nice and rested and sleep for Christmas, for Santa to come in.
Yep. Except for us Jewish guys, we'll be at the movies. Yeah, I couldn't help sneaking that in, I know.
I'm not going to say anything.
I know, it's a poor attempt at a joke, but whatever.
Was it really a joke?
Well, no, it's also partially true.
Does a joke really exist when no one makes a laugh?
Very true. So it was a pathetic attempt at something vaguely disguised as a joke.
Yeah, basically.
Actually, I got another joke for you. The New York Jets.
I thought you were going to say the New York Mets.
You want to forego football?
There's really nothing to say about the Jets.
Yeah, they lost. Simple. They lost. They suck. Penny was at best.
Yeah. And Bowles was saying that he was a bit too nervous and didn't make plays that he normally makes during practice.
Yeah, and there's also a good chance that Muhammad Wilkerson could be back off his 1-game suspension and playing on Sunday when the Jets play the Chargers.
I also heard that Sheldon Richardson might come back to the Jets.
What, from
Seattle.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't mind it, but then again, I know he had problems with Coach Bowles last year.
Who knows?
Yeah, so Wilkerson...
Maybe with a better nucleus of players and stuff, it could be better.
Could be, but I'm also hearing now with... I mean, Mo Wilkerson could be back. I heard he was practicing on Wednesday. So there's still an off chance. Who knows by the time kickoff rolls around? He didn't make the trip with the team to New Orleans when they got lambasted by the Saints. Because Ingram and Kamara both had insane days on the afternoon. You know what? The hell with it. Let's just get into it now. Quick look at the stat line from Jets Saints. It was a 31-19 win.
We don't need to know. The Jets didn't lose.
The Jets suck flat out.
I mean, hopefully by the time when we get back, we can talk about if the Jets should keep Todd Bowles if that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens. You know, we'll reevaluate the whole Black Monday thing in the playoffs and you know, see the what the future holds with the Jets and Giants.
We'll keep you up to date with that on social media, facebook.com/SallySteveOnSports.
Keep on plugging.
Twitter at @S_S_Sports.
Keep on plugging.
And the blog, ssonsports.blogspot.com.
Hallelujah.
Oh, that's it. Anyway, so, yeah, as if things wouldn't be more screwed up with the Jets, enter the New York Mets, who, in their infinite wisdom, have given Sandy Alderson a one-year contract extension for the general manager, who has done, nothing really since 2010 when he took over for Omar Minaya.
No, you can't say that.
One World Series trip and a wild card
game. Oh, come on. As a Met fan, you say one World Series. It's like you want to say that we didn't make it to the World Series.
No, we got to the World Series. You know, one World Series didn't make it to the World Series enough.
You didn't let me finish my sentence.
Go ahead.
No, I finished my sentence when I said enough.
All right.
Enough times for the World Series. It's like you're upset that we made it once.
I'm upset that Sandy Alderson is basically doing now what Jerry Reese had done with the Giants. And that he's not filling the holes that are on this team. And when he does...
And just giving us a bag of hope.
Yeah, no. I don't want that crap. I want guys who can actually play. Yes, the pitching staff's going to be good.
But that's on the whole caveat of if they're healthy.
Exactly. The pitching staff could be good if they're healthy. The bullpen had to find their roles a little bit better.
Hey, we spent on that one player.
What, JT Realmuto?
Whatever his name is, the one who got 14
Realmuto's
million.
Realmuto's a backup catcher.
I'm talking about the
14 million you spent on the relief pitcher.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, how about this? How about you not go after a 35-year-old guy who's just recently been released? How about that?
It's because the Mets want to play cheap. Again.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's the 35-year-old guy I'm referring to is Adrian Gonzalez. He was just cut by the Braves after getting traded to Atlanta in a huge deal.
He's a bargain bin because... Basically, Braves bought him out, so yeah. Mets could get him at the bare minimum.
Yeah, but why would you want to do... That's also been the Mets' MO at times in the past, is hiring all players who are way over the hill. Two perfect examples, Mo Vaughn, Roberto Alomar. Yeah. Need I say more?
Yep.
At least when they had guys like Delgado and Beltran, they still had some good years left in them. When Mo Vaughn and Roberto Alomar and Moises Alou made their appearances here in New York, their careers were pretty much over. Gary Sheffield, too.
Yeah, I didn't know why the Mets got Gary Sheffield.
I didn't either. I guess
he was a Met fan, you know, when he was growing up, and he wanted to like finish his career with the Mets.
Which it still made no damn sense.
No, it didn't.
And neither does going after.
He hit his 500th home run as a Met. Yippee!
Yeah, but seriously, looking at Adrian Gonzalez makes absolutely no sense. Like, I can kind of understand
maybe
the
as
Mets...
insurance for.
He barely played last year.
Yeah, with all those back issues, you don't know if that's really gonna come back and haunt him. All that type of stuff.
Yeah,
so.
it's not going to pay enough. They'll find a way to screw something else up.
What happened?
No, I said they'll find a way to screw something else up.
Oh, I thought you said you did.
No, I said they will find a way to screw something else up.
Yeah, you screwed up a lot today.
Yeah, we both have.
Exactly.
It's just because it's that kind of show. It's the holiday season.
Yeah, we're bound to make mistakes, as always. Yeah. We're not perfect.
I know, and before we continue on with them, I ran for the Mets. Happy holidays to everybody out there.
No,
we'll do that later. Fine, let's go.
You said it already, so...
All right. Happy holidays. Let's keep going with the Mets, although I really don't want to at this point because this team is mind-numbingly
you don't have to say
stupid.
Anything. What did Steve have to say about the Mets?
Steve's opinion is great on this.
Yeah, I mean, right. You don't have to say a damn thing.
Yeah, so I'll let Steve
You just have to...
All right, Steve's rant on the Mets, and I quote, I have to rant about the Mets again. The fact that they are talking to Adrian Gonzalez proves they are currently the worst run team in all of sports. The Wilpons think they can actually throw wool over the eyes of Mets fans and make us believe this is the same Adrian Gonzalez from 5 years ago. The Wilpons literally think signing Gonzalez would trick the fans into thinking that he was a big signing because Gonzalez was once a big name in the league. They figure we can bring in one high-profile guy for cheap and the fans will be happy. No! This was once again a bargaining bin shopping for a team that has many needs, but the owners do nothing. Nothing! I feel bad for the players who are on the team now, but I seriously hope that the Mets have an awful year. Having a good year would only make the Wilpons look like they knew what they were doing. They are cheap, greedy owners who deserve to have a last-place team with attendance dead last, with no one willing to pay for tickets, and a criminal price for parking, which is around $30 now.
Oh, God.
Yeah, man. It is. You remember how much we paid a couple years ago when we went to the White Sox game.
It's ridiculous.
I know, right? So, and the price of a hot dog, which the Mets will proudly think that they have the most expensive hot dog in the league. The Wilpons are disgraceful. They are setting a brand new manager with some promise up to fail. Look at the Yankees. Look what they are doing for first-year manager Aaron Boone. While they're setting him up for tremendous success, the Wilpons are literally spitting in Callaway's face, disgraceful. Fred and Jeff, absolutely disgraceful what they're doing with...
Hey, I'm not a disgrace.
Not you.
Hey.
Fred and Jeff are absolutely disgraceful for what they're doing to this man, this team, and the fans. I feel bad for everyone associated with this team, except those criminals who own them. For a Christmas miracle, I hope the MLB investigates them and finds something so that they can kick the Wilpons out and put the Mets up for sale, because if they haven't already, the Wilpons have replaced Dolan as the worst owners in New York. I could, you know what? I actually agree with him on that.
I really wish we could have had Steve actually say that.
I know. I'm sorry I can't get into full Steve mode.
Well, no, you can't. No one can replicate Steve.
Eric's tried a couple times on this show.
No, that's just an imitation.
Yeah.
It's like imitation crap. It's not real.
Yeah, I know. It's like Whose Line Points. It's never going to happen. But anyway, also, again, like Whose Line Points, the Mets are never going to be sold by the Wilpons.
Hell no. Because they know that they keep on getting millions on millions of dollars from the TV revenue.
Pretty much.
And that's the whole thing, is that it doesn't matter about ticket sales.
No.
It's all about the money coming in from the TV revenue. And it's also the $50 million every team gets from MLB Advanced Media.
Yeah.
So it's like, where's the incentive when they know all these other ventures are coming in to them?
Hand over fist.
Exactly. Yeah, I was going for that exact phrase. Thank you.
Which is why it's annoying that teams think like this. They always have to worry about money. I claim bull crap. The ultimate goal besides making money would be to win a championship every year, right?
I mean, that's the thing, is that we're thinking as fans and they're thinking as
a business.
As a business, exactly.
Well,
so
why not put a little bit of fandom back into the business and try to go after the best possible players available?
Because that means that they're not making profits. And in the end of the day, they're not making profits.
Yeah, but you have to think about this from the other side of the coin. If you put a decent team on the field that actually has, I don't know, winning ball club, you might be able to turn more of a profit because people actually show up.
No, it goes to show you that ticket sales only factor in a small amount.
I think out of the big four sports, the only one that's actually got a bulk of their revenue generated by, or is more of a gate-driven sport, is hockey. Hockey, I think, is the only sport out of the four that's completely gate-driven.
Well, I mean, the cable deal saved the Islanders from Long Island.
Very true, but a lot... Again, I think 75% of league revenue for the NHL is gate-driven. Sure, I mean, they're dead last from one report I read, and as far as revenue is concerned, they trail football, baseball, basketball, and NASCAR in revenue sales as far as merchandise is concerned, does the NHL. So, if the Wilpons don't give a crap about the gate, they're worried about TV ratings and how they're going to get their money that way.
No, it doesn't matter about... Well, I guess when the contract renew... But no, things that they have their own damn network as well.
Yeah, SNY.
So, yeah, so, I mean, I don't really see that, Matt, that they have their own revenue, TV revenue.
There's so much more that the Mets could have possibly done. And, again, this is the fan coming out.
They just need to give us some ideas of improvement.
Like, show more that you're going after a guy like Jason Kipnis of the Indians. That way you can replace a hole at second base.
Or try to get the guy from the Marlins who plays second base.
Wasn't D. Gordon, he was just traded.
Well, no, that's who I was thinking of.
Yeah, D. Gordon was traded to the Mariners.
Yeah, no, it's like, at least try to get...
Or at least, there's two guys at Kansas City that are now, I believe, free agents you could have gone after. Eric Hosmer, who plays first, and Mike Moustakas, the third baseman. Because you know damn good and well David Wright's never going to play again. His career is pretty much dead. And as far as first base is concerned, you honestly want to sit there and tell me that you really think Dominic Smith is the first baseman of the future with this Mets team? Get the hell out of here. I'm sorry, I think Dominic Smith's good, but I don't think he's the first baseman of the future with this ball club, and I'm sick and tired of seeing the Mets try to put a Band-Aid over this crap when clearly a Band-Aid's not going to work. You need full-blown stitches to try to shoot the monster full of electricity. Try to turn this into a Frankenstein monster that wins baseball games. If you can manage to pull it off, I'd like to be able to see something.
And actually hire a medical team that knows how to heal their players.
Exactly.
And keep their players in tip-top shape for when spring training comes.
The three biggest examples of how they possibly screwed players up, Yoán Cespedes with his leg injuries, David Wright with his back, and Ike Davis with his ankle.
David Wright with his back. No, that's spinal stenosis. You can't say that. Ike Davis, yes.
Yoán Cespedes, yes. Cespedes had leg problems last year, which is why he was out of the
lineup. Oh, no, here's a good third one. Ryan Church.
Yes. I almost completely forgot about Ryan
Church.
Going
on a plane with a concussion. Great idea.
Yeah. And look what happened to him.
You should have sent him on ground.
Yeah, you should have.
Pack him up, bubble wrap him, throw him into the UPS
FedEx
truck.
Ground.
Or FedEx ground.
Yep.
Because, you know, we're in the FedEx studios.
Yeah.
You know, just send him that way.
Yeah, that would have worked, but did it? No.
Nope. I mean, yeah, it might take 5 days instead of like 10 hours, but no, not 10 hours, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, now I know what you mean. At least the Mets farm system will be back in New York instead of out in Vegas.
That is true, but...
Is it going to help this team? Probably not.
No, because the Mets farm system isn't that good.
According to... Sandy Alderson said that in the press conference the other day.
Oh, good. Crap on your own farm system.
He's like, he literally said in the press conference, and I'm paraphrasing this, there's not much we can do because we're working with financial restraints and our farm system's depleted. He actually said that in the press conference.
Great.
I'm like, good job trying to reassure your fans and get us to come to watch your team on, get us to watch your team on TV and try to come out to the ballpark in the middle of the summer. Good job. Meanwhile, the Yankees go out and get Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah, you know, the NL MVP. Okay.
They bring back CeCe Sabathia for $10 million for one more year.
And he did a very good job and had a really great run from last season.
He did.
So, yeah, reward
him.
Hey,
I applaud Sabathia for what he did, and I applaud him for getting a contract.
It's just another reason how Mets fans are just so angry at... I don't know if when you see the Yankees move as a Met fan... Are you more angry at the Yankees for making these moves in the first place, or angry at management for not trying like the Yankees are?
Oh, that's easy. I'm angry at Mets management for not doing a damn thing. The Yankees are doing the smart thing because they want to win championships. That's more important to me as far as I'm concerned.
And here's the thing is that they were able to get under the cap to make these moves and make decisions and strengthen the farm system while being competitive.
And they wanted to get under the luxury tax so they didn't have to pay extra amount of money. That's exactly what they did.
And all these young players are still young enough to not get paid what they really deserve from their contracts, so they can get Giancarlo for these next few years. And when Giancarlo's gone, then you can pay the Judges and the Sanchezes of the world.
And Greg Bird, because Bird has the potential to possibly put up
humongous
numbers,
too. He just needs to complete a full season for that to really
I want to see him stay healthy first. But you have Gleyber Torres, you have Clint Frazier, you have Aguilar, the hot prospect they're talking about. Seriously, the only two big weaknesses are what they're going to do with second and third between Torres, Aguilar, Frazier. If they could get that figured out, the Yankees would be set. You still have Didi at short. You got Bird at first. Your outfield's pretty much set in stone at this point. You got your DH in Stanton, who can play the outfield, mind you. You got a lot of talent down in the Bronx, and what do the Mets have? A bag of peanuts, a starting pitching staff, and Jose Reyes.
I mean, they have Cespedes.
Conforto.
Yeah, they have Conforto if they don't mess him up with his batting.
Which chances are the Mets will find a way to screw that up anyway.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is that it's all that you don't want to go into a season with a bunch of, well, if this happens and this happens, we're going to do well if this happens and if this happens and if this does right. No, you need to keep on having contingency plans. And that's the problem is that the Mets management thinks that this was just enough. We're fine where we are. We're going to stay the course.
That happened 3 years ago. They brought in they made two huge trades right before they got Cespedes, and I'm drawing a blank on the two guys they brought in. Why does this happen? Hold on, I'm drawing a blank now on who the hell they picked up before they got in Cespedes. It's gonna bug the crap out of me now. Hang on.
Yeah, no. Okay, so it's just I agree with Matt though that it makes Mets management so more hateful as a Met fan when you see the Yankees being aggressive. And it's really frustrating and has really made me apathetic as a Met fan. I've become one of those dormant Met fans because of the constant nothingness that this organization brings. It makes me not want to go to a cheap game facing off an American League team that I don't really care about.
And again, that says a lot coming from you, because you and your family used to have the Sunday plan all the time.
And with those parking things, they just think that fans would just still come. I bet even if they have an empty stadium, I bet they'll still make money because of all the revenue.
Yeah, it's going to be a bad...
I would love to see if all Met fans somehow organize that they don't show up for 81 games.
Try to stay away from the ballpark.
Yeah, I would love to see what would happen.
And the two trades I was talking about were bringing in Kelly Johnson and Juan Uribe.
Ah, yes.
They kind of got the ball rolling. Then they bring in Cespedes, and it's like, okay, now we have a big league team. The Mets format prior to that was, let's just rely on the pitching staff. So, yeah, we got that. But, hey, at least there is some other positive to come out of New York. The Islanders will be back on Long Island. Thank God.
Finally.
They brought back, the Islanders have won the bid to redevelop the sign at Belmont Park over by the racetrack, which is in Nassau County, so it's back on Long Island. Well, then again, geographically, they're still on Long Island in Brooklyn, but Brooklyn's counted more as a city than it is Long Island.
Yes.
But they're back on Long Island. It's going to take about 3 years to develop the area and get the arena set up. It's, I've heard 18,000-seat venue, which is going to house, of course, 41 home games for the Islanders, plus you include that, 150 events throughout the course of the year at the new building. Naming rights haven't been announced yet. None of that's been set in stone yet. But
hotel, residential, and shopping.
Yep, and that's included in the new arena. The only other bid that was placed was by NYCFC, the football club who's currently playing at Yankee Stadium. They were going to build a 26,000-seat venue, but it would have made more sense to have the Islanders there. So they're back on Long Island. The Islanders could be out of Barclays Center as early as the end of next season. Maybe at the end of this year.
I would say that because of this, that the Islanders of Barclays will have a contract for them to stay until
the new arena
is up and running.
But the funny thing, though, I found out is that the developing companies that are helping out the Islanders fund and build the new arena
are the Wilpons.
One of them is the Wilpons. The other one of the other companies, the parent company for them, Madison Square Garden.
What can you do?
Yeah.
You know what? Charitable.
Right, the way I look at it, though, they're back on
New York franchises helping out other New York franchises. Gotta love it.
Exactly. They're back on Long Island where they belong.
Yes.
And now, what I'd like to be able to have going into that new building is solid goaltending to go along with the second-best offense in the league. But that's for another argument for another day. Since we're running low on time, let's get into it. Final Pigskin Pick'em of the Year, Jeff. Let's go.
This is the Sully and Steve on Sports
Pigskin Pick'em.
Turn down for what?
We are 1 week away from finishing this year's Pigskin Pick'em, but we don't need to know or find out who will win because a winner has finally been decided.
Yes, yes, yes.
Let's see how it all goes down. The first game is Detroit at Chicago, and Matt predicted Detroit to win by 10, and that was the outcome, a 20-10 win, so Matt wins that first game. The second one up is New York hosting the Philadelphia Eagles. And there are only two that picked the Eagles. That was Matt and Dan. Matt picked them to win by the Eagles win by 7. And Dan predicted them to win by 10. So the score was 34-29, a close game. And thought that Dan would get the win because of the two teams where they were in the standings. Who knew that the Philadelphia defense didn't do well, period. And so it became a 34-29 win for Philadelphia, a 5-point differential, meaning Matt takes the Philadelphia game since it did not go over Matt's prediction of 7.
There you go.
And now we have the Jets at New Orleans. All three of the hosts picked New Orleans, and Steve picked the lowest point differential of 14, and the score ended up 31-19, a point differential of 12. Meaning Steve got that one, so it's 2-1 in favor of Matt. So now we go on to the Seattle game as they host the Rams. And who would have thought that this would have been a barn burner of a game?
I didn't think it was going to be this much
of a
blowout.
All three of you picked below the point differential, you being the highest with 10. And the point differential was 35.
Yeah.
So Matt has a 3-1 lead. The only way that it could be tied is if Steve wins these next two games.
Didn't happen on the next one, did it?
Well, it was Tennessee at San Francisco, and almost Tennessee pulled out the victory. But Jimmy Garoppolo, still undefeated as a San Francisco 49er, winning by a score of 25-23, a point differential of 2. Matt, though, picked San Francisco to win by 7, while Dan predicted them to win by 3. So Dan gets that one. But that means that with a 3-1-1, it doesn't matter that Matt was the only one that picked Dallas in that one, which gave him the fourth win of the game of the week.
Yeah.
So that means that Matt ended up with 4 wins. Steve and Dan tied with 1. And this is how the standings breaks down. Matt got his sixth first place victory of the season. back-to-back, also a first of this season, raising him from 21 to 24. And with Steve and Dan getting second place, they both got a point, raising Steve, though, from 19 to 20 with 1 week to go. Matt has won Pigskin Pick'em for the 2017 season.
Second year in a row. I got the Magic Carp last year, and I got the T-shirt this year.
So, Matt, here you go. I have the shirt for you right now.
It is so beautiful.
Matt has won our prize of the Liam Neeson quote from Taken. You know which one I'm talking about.
Yep.
With a picture of the blue Koopa shell, spiked shell from Mario Kart.
And it says, I don't know who you are, but I will
find
you.
I just said everyone knows it.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
So but here we go.
You know what? Just for fun, let's pick games.
We
got to
finish off
16.
The season.
Now, are we going to do this for week 17 too, or just
I said this
16?
Our last
one. All right, then. I'm just clarifying it for everybody else.
Okay, so the first one up as we start our New York games, as always, is the Chargers going to the Jets. And I'll start off by saying that both Steve and Dan predicted the Chargers to win. Dan went with the more big differential of 10, while Steve thought it would be closer with a point differential of 5.
All right. I'm going to go a little bit larger than Danny. I'm going Chargers by 14, only because Philip Rivers is a hell of a lot better of a quarterback than Bryce Petty. And who the hell knows what's going on with the Jets defense? Jets fall. Chargers win it by 14. Jeff, next game.
The higher ground goes to Matt. Turn down for what? And our second game is the Giants, the Sunday night game, all the way in Arizona.
Giants and the Cardinals. This one's going to be going to be a little bit tougher than I thought it was going to be. But
well, two poor teams.
Yeah, I know. Actually, I'm going to change this. I originally had my prediction going one way. I'm going the other. I'm taking the Giants to get the win this week.
Ooh.
Because Arizona is not as good as Seattle, and I'm expecting another big game, or at least a decent game out of Eli Manning. Giants will get the win by a field goal.
All right. Wow. So you are the only one that predicted the Giants, as the other two predicted the Cardinals. Dan also thinks the game is going to be won by a field goal, while Steve thinks that the Cardinals will win by a touchdown, 7 points.
All right. So I'm the only one picking the Giants. We'll see if I'm right. Jeff, next game. Turn down for
what? And our final randomizer of the Pigskin Pick'em season.
What are we doing, 3 picks this week?
No, there's 4. The final randomizer section.
Yeah, we've only gone 2 games.
Yeah, the final randomizer. You know, the whole section.
Ah.
You know, I don't know.
Final 4 randomizers. All right, there we go.
Yeah. So the first one predicted by the randomizer would have been a good game if Aaron Rodgers was healthy and the Green Bay Packers were in it, but they are not. Aaron Rodgers is on the IR, and they're hosting the Minnesota Vikings. So we have a big point differential for Dan.
How big are we talking here?
A 20-point victory by Minnesota.
Wow. I'm not going that high.
How high are you going?
I'm going Minnesota by 10.
Ooh, Minnesota by 10.
Yeah.
Ooh, I say that because Steve has Minnesota by 9.
Ah!
So that means you can only get that game
if Minnesota wins by 10.
Yes.
All right. And Danny has the higher ground, so anything above 10, Dan automatically gets the win. On that note, Jeff,
well,
next game.
Not automatically, because if Green Bay wins, then none of you win.
Right. But if it's a Minnesota win and higher than 10, automatic win for Danny. Jeff, next game. Turn down
for what? So what we have here is Detroit fighting for their playoff lives as they go to Cincinnati.
Detroit and Cincinnati. Where do I want to go with this? Well, let's see. Since Marvin Lewis is going to be gone at the end of the year anyway, he's already announced that he's done at the end of the season.
Wow, it took him to go away for the Bengals to not have him anymore.
Yeah, well, he knew the Bengals were going to suck. They're going to be on a sinking ship. He's right. Detroit gets the win. Bengals win it by 7 points.
Okay. And Dan, again, has the higher ground.
What's he picking? So we both agree on Detroit, but what's he taking it by this time?
14.
All right, and Steve's in the middle somewhere?
No, you're in the middle.
Really?
Yes. Steve has Detroit winning by 4.
All right. So Dan once again has the higher ground, which has worked for him at times in the past, but at times it has also bitten him in the rear end. Jeff, next game. Turn down
for what? Now, if I said this game at the start of the season, you probably would have laughed. But because of the way Jacksonville has been playing this entire season, and the way Jimmy Garoppolo has been playing since becoming a San Francisco 49er, who will win this game in San Francisco between the Jags and the 49ers?
This one's actually going to be a good game. I'm picking Jacksonville and what would be considered, well, some people have the Jags favorite anyway, but with the way Jimmy Garoppolo's played the last 3 weeks, I'm considering it an upset. I will take Jacksonville in this. I figure Jacksonville's still got a lot to play for in this game. They still got a division title on the line. And they did it last week without Leonard Fournette. I believe he might be back on Sunday. I wouldn't swear to it. But from every indication I'm getting, Leonard Fournette could be back on Sunday. And with him going and with the way Blake Bortles has played, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to get outplayed. Jacksonville wins it by 3.
Close game. Okay. Meanwhile, from our other two hosts, they also pick Jacksonville. But they both pick the same point differential of 10. So that's how it goes. They can't change their scores since they're not here.
Yep.
Tough for them.
It's either they get the win or I do. We'll see how that goes. And for the final time
if Jacksonville gets the win.
Right. And for the final time this year, Jeff, last game. Turn down for
what? Last game for the 2017 Pigskin Pick'em Prediction season. And it is two teams fighting for their playoff lives as well. The struggling Seahawks go to Jerry World. And Jerry World gets Zeke back. So is this going to be a big win for Dallas as Zeke comes back? Or will somehow the Seahawks find a way to win?
I don't think Seattle's going to find a way to win. I think Dallas is going to get the victory in this game because Zeke Elliott's returning and because of what the Rams were able to do to Russell Wilson last week and how badly they contained Russell Wilson. Because you got to remember, Russell got sacked 7 times last week. And Dallas' defense is no slouch either. They're not as good as the Rams' defense, but they're still a very good defense in their own right. Seattle's a good team. I'm not taking anything away from what they've done, but the Cowboys keep their playoff hopes alive. Dallas gets the win by 7.
Now, this one also has some diversity in it.
Okay.
The only other game we have diversity in is New York and Arizona.
Yep.
So, do you want to guess if you are the only one that picked Dallas, or has someone else picked Dallas?
I think somebody else picked Dallas.
Who would that be?
That would probably be Steve.
Wrong.
Danny picked Dallas.
Danny picked Dallas to win by 13.
All right.
Well, Steve only has to worry about a Seattle win, but he predicted them to win by 3.
All right, so if Seattle wins, Steve's right. If Dallas wins, point differential goes to me and Danny. Boy, this will be fun this week to close out the regular season.
Yep, and for the last time,
Jeff, shut this the hell down.
All right. Turn down for what? So there you go.
Yep.
It doesn't really matter what happens. We just got to complete the season.
Why not?
So.
And we've also got the championships in our league. Danny's going to be playing his dad for the title this year.
Yeah.
Everybody was begging and pleading me to do anything. I'm like I said before, I have no control over what goes on. Todd Gurley went off, had 50 points. He bested the 45 Kareem Hunt had. So, yeah, Danny's playing his dad for the title. Good luck to both of them. Happy holidays to everybody. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy holidays. We'll talk to you again in 2018. Follow us on social media, facebook.com/SollySteveOnSports, Twitter @S_S_Sports. We will keep you updated as often as we can on social media with what's going on in the sports world over the next couple weeks while Jeff's in Tokyo. We will have mini rants. We've got posts on the blog, ssunsports.blogspot.com. All the latest episodes of the show are on iTunes. Everything else is on SoundCloud. Just search Solly and Steve on Sports. Hit download. You can take us with you wherever you go. Email SollySteveOnSports@gmail.com for everybody working hard behind the scenes. And for Jeff, I'm Solly. We'll be back in 2018. Happy holidays.
And a happy new year.
Yay, yay.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal.
And a happy new year.